Welcome to the Big Careers Small Children podcast. My name is Verena Hefti. I believe that no one should have to choose between becoming a CEO and enjoying their young children. For much too long, brilliant people have found themselves stuck on the career ladder when they have children, and that leads to gender inequality in leadership and the same stale, mostly male, middle-class people leading our organizations. We absolutely must change this, and I hope that many of you listening right now to this podcast will progress to the most senior leadership roles possible in a way that works for you and for your families, so you can make the decisions that make our world and our organizations better places. Beyond the podcast, I am the CEO and founder of the social enterprise Leaders Plus, which is all about giving parents the support and space to progress to senior leadership in a way that works for them and their families. We have lots of free events and also lots of resources on leadersplus.org, where you can download helpful toolkits such as on returning from maternity leave, or securing a promotion as a working parent, or thriving or surviving, depending how you look at it, as a dual career couple. We also have an award-winning global fellowship program for working parents who have big dreams for their careers but don't want to sacrifice everything for it. You will join a tight-knit, supportive group of people. You'll get space to think about what you want for your life, for your family, for your career, a senior leader mentor, and a lot of targeted support in order to get you where you would like to be. And you can find all that on leadersplus.org/fellowship for the details. The next application deadline is on 20th March 2024, and you can download the brochure on leadersplus.org. This week I'm chatting to Þóri Proppi from Iceland about what is working for gender equality in Iceland, what we can learn to implement in other countries, and what she thinks will help us close the gender pay gap. Enjoy the conversation.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me to your podcast. So I am from Iceland. I am married with two children. They are grown up, so different problems than before. So they're 25 and 18, and of course I should not be saying their problem because they are really great. So I am the founder and CEO of Alda. We are an Icelandic startup. We just launched our software this fall. It's a revolutionary DEI software about diversity, equity, and inclusion. So what we do there is that we have it's a platform for, making a decision based on data. So we have both the inclusion index, we have all key metrics for DEI, we have gamified micro-learning, and AI-driven action plans and recommendations. So we have all in one in this platform. So this is kind of a dream of mine coming true in this startup because, I've been involved in DEI for around 20 years now in one way or another. And the years before I started Alda, which was in 3 years ago, before that I was working for years as a DEI consultant. I was a partner at Capacent Consulting Agency. So I was also in politics before. I was the main political advisor to the Minister of the Interior. And in that arena, the political arena, I was also very much involved in equality and DEI. I was also a board member of the UN Women National Committee and deputy board member of the Icelandic Gender Equality Fund. And before that, I was an activist. I have been working a lot. An activist for many years before that, mostly with the WIDE organization, global organization fighting violence against women. So this has been kind of in my DNA for decades now.
And it was quite interesting to speak to you because I think it's fascinating that you exist in the nicest possible way, because in all the indexes, Iceland is held up as this brilliant, brilliant country for women. And, you think, actually, there's no need anymore for gender equality. But just to bring our listeners along, can you remind us how Iceland is doing in terms of gender equality compared to the rest of Western Europe?
Yes. Well, before I tell you exactly that, there are actually two main reasons why we're doing it. One reason is because we are world leaders in equality. So that's why we can bring a lot of, what do you say, like best practices to the table. Another reason is also because we have still a very long way to go. So, you know, we don't really have any gender paradise or equality paradise anywhere in the world. So, unfortunately. So Iceland has been, for example, number one in the World Economic Forum Global Gender Gap Report for 14 years now. So we have really been leading the way there. And the reason why we are number one there is mostly because of our political representation and empowerment. Also, we have, well, wage equality is and the equal pay. We have a really, what is a small pay gap in Iceland, but note, we still have it.
What does that mean, just out of interest? What does small look like for you?
Yeah, so for us, I think it's around 5% now. That is like the weighted pay gap. And then also we have really strong economic participation and opportunity. So basically what we have been doing really well in Iceland is the infrastructure, the legislation, regulations. We also have a really strong support, well, of course, in form of infrastructure. For example, well, kindergarten. We also have a really high participation in the workforce for all genders. And we also have the equal pay laws that we implemented in 2017, which is probably why we have this small pay gap. And we have quotas for corporate boards. So 40% needs to be represented by each gender. And also, like I said before, the kindergartens and the access to daycare is, of course, well, in my opinion, one of the biggest factor or the most important factor for all genders to be able to participate in the workforce. Because we don't really have a daycare that is only like, what do you say, storing the children, but they're really like motivating them. And we have really like professional people working in our kindergartens, all with like different policies. So I was on the board of the kindergarten committee for the city of Reykjavik. And it was so inspiring to meet the leaders within this sector. They are so amazing. They are all having like this different policies, both which they have made themselves and also something that they have applied from abroad. So there's a lot of really amazing work being done in each of the kindergarten, motivating the children. So people don't really need to feel guilty, would say, like leaving their children in the kindergarten.
I mean, you are making me so jealous. Our nursery is wonderful, but it's just the structure, the level of pay that they're getting is sadly completely different.
Oh, yeah. I also forgot, because this is important that you're saying, the pay. This is also really accessible. So everybody can afford to put their children in kindergarten because it is subsidized by the government.
Mm. So the UK, where I'm based, has a 14.9% pay gap, mm-hmm. as you know, and it is closing very, very slowly. It will be closing, I think, 2051 at the current rate.
Mm-hmm.
It means that from November, early November onwards, women on average work for free.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the issue is not necessarily paying illegally mm-hmm. people, you know, women versus for the same job. It is that fewer women are in those senior roles. So from your Icelandic experience then, is it just essentially quotas that have forced that? Or is there something else that you'd say, please, UK organizations, just change that in order to get a real step change?
So I am actually quite for quotas in general. I think quotas is the best way to adjust the injustice in our system, because we cannot afford to wait, because of course there is... Well, it's sometimes called the stupid curve, that we are not really using all the great talents we have in the workforce because of the cultural resistances in our society, the workplace culture resistance. So I'm not sure if the quotas is the only reason. Well, let's just start from the beginning. We are not good in this part. So we have not really been practicing this as well in the private sector as in the public sector. So in the private sector, we only have, like, let's say we look at the listed companies on the Nasdaq, the stock exchange, there are only 4 women CEOs there of the 21 companies who are listed. And only like a year ago, there was no woman. And they were like, it was like that for almost 2 years or something. And also, if we look at the private sector in general, there are around 24, 25 women who are part of the management teams there. And in general, if you look at the whole market, not only like the listed companies, there are around like 12% women CEOs of all CEOs. So,
which is not that much better at all.
No.
I'm shaking my head, and you are too. It's really actually not. But what I love is, so I read this Reykjavik Index, which I can highly recommend anybody just to look it up online, and it compares attitudes towards leadership, as in female leadership, and how people feel about it. But I was really surprised to see that Icelandic women were some of the most dissatisfied with the gender equality. Mm-hmm. And I just love that it sounds like there isn't the acceptance that it's okay. And somehow in the UK, it's kind of like we think, we've got bigger problems. And of course, we have big problems in that there are some people, sorry for any of the non-UK listeners here, I know I'm speaking as a Swiss person very much about the UK, but, you know, there are children going to food banks and so on. Like, it is not great. There are also many great things. I don't want to slag off the UK, but there are problems. However, people somehow think it's like a nice to have women in leadership here. I really feel that. And they don't say it. And of course, all the big organizations have, you know, their initiative and so on. But people behind closed doors, senior leaders, sometimes say to me, well, actually, it's not really that big of an issue.
Yeah, this is really interesting. And well, in my experience, because I've been working with a lot of organizations, when you start the DEI and the gender discussion within the organization, you always have a little bit of a backlash before you go forward, because first people realize the injustice and the underrepresented groups. They realize that firstly that they are underrepresented and that they really have a voice there to state and to point out the indifferences. So I think that has been the case in Iceland for quite some time, since actually 1975. The women in Iceland have been really actively and also really united in stating these injustices. So that's something, and we did that like now in October. There were 100,000 women and non-binary people who marched the streets and protested, because we have still so much injustice in our system. It's not only what I was talking about now, like the lack of women and other genders in leadership roles. It's also, you know, we still have violence against women. We have quite high rates of violence against women. We have the stereotypes and biases, and also the typical gender-based educational choices, and also the occupational segregation that we have within our system. That is probably the reason why we still have the gender pay gap. And we are also experiencing in Iceland, like all over the world, where you have the backlash in terms of, well, it's probably, you can say it's the anti-woke movements, where there is this prejudice towards people from the LGBTQ plus community, towards women and non-binary people and so on. So this is something that it's really important to stand firm now because of this turbulence that is happening all over the world. And that's what we have been doing here in Iceland quite firmly.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a good reminder, actually. Just to mention again, this Reykjavik Index, if any of the listeners do want to see it, it's very interesting in how, if I remember it right, on generally younger people's views of whether a woman has a leadership ability is lower in Europe than it is of older people. So younger people today think a woman is, I'm simplifying hugely here, quite a complex data piece, but so younger people are less likely to see a woman as a potential leader than older people. So I love the reminder, and I think I just needed that today, that actually the reminder is that we cannot give up, and we need to stand up and drive change. And you've done that as an activist. But tell me, first of all, when you do get that backlash, and you do get it, I mean, people know what I do for work, and I will go to a room of old white males who are all in powerful positions and try to talk to them about gender equality. And people tell me, it doesn't matter or they don't have a problem with it, and actually it's only the women don't really want to be leaders. How do you tackle that backlash that you mentioned?
So I just wanted to also agree with you about the Reykjavik Index, because I've been attending the Reykjavik Global Forum every year where they're representing the Reykjavik Index. And it's actually shocking to see it also, the backlash there, because, you know, it's like really, it is so disappointing to see things moving backwards, not forward. And even though it has been moving forward, like really, really slowly and too slowly, you know, we should not be patient about it, because this is not right. How do you approach this? Well, I think there's one word that can't just like grasp it really well, and that's data. So I have become like a really true believer of the data is the thing that will change the path we are on regarding DEI. I have been working on this for many years, and the only time that I see that we are able to get people who are in like this kind of like not overrepresented, but majority representation on the workplace, and also like privilege. They hold privilege, like we both hold privilege, but like they who hold it even more, like men, is when they see data. When they see data that there is a difference between like the experience of the underrepresented groups and them. Because when they see hard data that shows it, then it's much easier for them to emphasize with that group. Because when you only hear it from this person or this person, and it's like, okay, I hear it from Thore that, but Thore, she is always complaining, and she is always like this and that. And
exactly.
Yeah. And she's always talking about this, you know, gender equality. And so she's probably, you know, so if it's not like tied to like a certain person, you know, it's just like, it's a data set, it's hardcore data based on research, then it's much easier to start the conversation and get them on board in order to move forward. So this is one data, which is the experience data. Then another data is so important. And that's also, we have a lot of data in the world. We have over 200 research that show us that diverse teams perform much better. So there's a McKinsey research that was done a few years ago, which shows that, well, gender diversity, the teams were performing 25% better. When you add also ethnicity as a variable in the diversity part, then it was 35% better. So we also have research that show that you have 20% better result with innovation and entrepreneurship when you have diverse teams. Looking at the environmental factors, because now we're focusing a lot on ESG and the environmental part. So focusing on the S, the social part in the ESG, and especially focusing on diversity, you can reach 20% better results on the environmental progress than with homogeneous teams. So, you know, there's a lot of data that shows us this. And if you think about it, if you're a leader in an organization and someone would show you, okay, if you do this, you will reach 25% better results. When you do it, you know, it's obviously so. And after, like, I've been working on this for, as I told you, like decades, it's such a no-brainer that you should be having diverse teams, because everything about it is like, you know, if you have a set of homogeneous teams sitting together and you are looking at the data set or research results, if we are all approaching it in the same way, we are probably not finding the best solutions or looking at it through different lenses in order to see opportunities to find solutions or find new ways. Or, you know, we will always be doing what we have been doing before and building on that. We are not opening up new paths, new ways, and finding new results. So it's, for me, it seems pretty obvious, but it's all built on data. I think that's the way to move forward.
Interesting. Just out of curiosity, do you look at the subject of parents as a subsection within the data or not yet?
Yeah, we have been doing that. So the solution we have today is also built on the metrics we've been doing with a lot of organizations before. And we were especially looking at parental leaves, because in Iceland we have, yeah, maybe I should tell you about like how we have it here before I start. So we just changed our parental leave. It was in 2000 when we passed the first like long parental leave. So then we had 3 months for each parent that was allocated to them, and 3 months they could allocate with or share in between them. So it was 9 overall. So there is like 80% of the salary of the parent is paid, but there is like a roof, a maximum of 600,000 Icelandic krona. I don't know how much that tells you, but And then we changed it a few years ago. I think it was 2 years ago that we changed it. And then now we have like 6 months for each parent. So it's 12 months in total. And there are 6 weeks that the parents can share in between them. So this is something that, of course, it was a great progress and a great victory for all parents. But what we have been looking at when we were working with organizations on their DEI, we were looking at, okay, how is the parental leave distributed? And so we were looking at how many days do women take in average and how many days do the men take in average? And it was a lot of difference between them. It was like when we were doing it in the organizations we were working with, it was around like 90 days that the men were typically doing on average, and the women were doing like 300 days. So they went like way beyond what were their legal
minimum.
Yeah, and then the men only took what was for them, like what was allocated to them, but they did not like in general take a lot of the shared part. So I think that this is something that also another metric we were looking at, was it a continuous one or not? So like the women, typically they went on a continuous 300 days parental leave. So then went completely away from the workplace and someone was hired for them. So when they came back, they had quite like missed out a lot. And this is typically in the period in their career where there's a lot of progression going on. You know, they were struggling sometimes to come back, of course, that's a global problem. And the men, they were usually not doing it continuously. So they were taking like 3 weeks, and then they were taking 3 weeks, and then 2 weeks. And there was a lot of the vacation where like adding to the Christmas vacation or adding to the summer vacation. So they were not really missing out anything from their workplace. They were still in the line of progression, and so they were not really missing out as much as the women. And so this is something that I'm a bit worried about, and I'm not the only one, that, you know, even though we have now made the 6 months and 6 months, if the parents are not equally using their rights in that matter, then this, of course, is not having the affection on the society as proposed, you know, or as was like the goal when with the law. And the goal is to have, it was actually to ensure the children, they will have the care of both their parents when they were in this, the first months and years of their life. So that was the main reason why it was passed in the parliament.
I love that the data has influenced how law is made. Mm-hmm. That is exactly what is needed. And we see the same thing, as you know, here in the UK, and many listeners from the US will think that we are very privileged, but here in the UK, it's quite complicated to even get shared parental leave. Some people do take it at the same time as the woman, which then obviously is more an extended holiday than taking care alone of the children, which does change the behavior of the family. So I couldn't agree with you more. And what do you think about this problem of, I mean, do you agree that it is a problem that women who have children stop progressing? Is that the same in Iceland? Like, that's what we seem to see in the UK, in that people's career progress quite well, and then they really plateau. Women plateau once they have children, which is exactly like you say, prime progression time, and men continue to progress. Mm-hmm. I'm simplifying, but that seems to be the trend. Is that the same that you're experiencing?
So I don't really have like the exact data, but I would guess that maybe it's even a more of a problem in the UK because you don't have the same access to daycare and so on like we have here in Iceland. So it's probably easier for women here to come back from the maternity leave or the parental leave. There's another thing that is so important also, and that's like because we did a lot of qualitative research, so we had a lot of qualitative interviews and also both with men and women. And one of our findings there is that men, there's a lot of hindrance in the culture for men to take the parental leave, even though maybe the management team will always say, like, of course, this is your right and you can do it, then maybe like the peer culture in the workplace is more like there's a lot of obstructions there when it's not as common for them in some workplaces and a lot of workplaces to see men go for like in a continuous parental leave for a longer time. Thankfully, this is changing a lot, but not enough, because we, of course, we would like to see this being distributed according to the rights that people have legally. But another factor, and one factor that we cannot really ignore, is that men are still most, well, a lot of the homes have higher paid male than female. So then they need to make a financial decision about who is going. Some homes need to do that, and a lot of them, of course. So that's still a problem. And so this all, of course, aligns and is interconnected, like the salary part and the parental leave part. You know, you cannot really, what do you say, like isolate it from each other, because you need to look at it as a, well, almost as a one variable. So what we have been seeing in Iceland is that, you know, what used to be a problem, like, for example, when younger women were applying for a job, you know, it does not seem to be an obstacle. You know, they're not hiring women because they think they're going to have children. Now it's equal for, so you cannot really, you know, predict that, you know, okay, it's more likely the woman goes than the man, you know. So it's like that's variable, and that obstacle has been taken. I think in general, that's not there anymore. So there's a lot of good progress there. But I think still we need to work a lot on the culture and the stereotypes about, you know, it's better for the children to have their mothers than their fathers. I think that there's a lot of fathers that are, and we have been hearing from them in media, and who really want to spend this time with their children, want to get to know them, and want to be the part of their first months and years. And there's a lot of discussion now in Iceland about the third watch, the mental loads. So there was a book written, there was a couple that they have been really active in the equality and DEI scene in Iceland. And they wrote this amazing book about the third shift. So for people who haven't heard about it, the first shift is the workplace, where we have actually the formal shifts. And then we have the home, which is the second shift, where we need to do all the roles there. And then we have the mental load, which is the third shift. And the mental load is sometimes like, you know, I think it's good to compare it with being the manager of the house. Being the one who is always like, okay, this week we need to have the yellow costumes for the kindergarten, and we need to buy birthday gift for Uncle John, and we need to get this to the laundry, and have we ordered all the food for the meals for this week? So on, you know what I'm getting. So
I'm laughing because it makes me smile that you are saying that the challenge of getting the right color clothes to children, but that's clearly a global issue.
Yeah.
It's funny how much mental load goes onto making sure that you don't forget wear red day.
Yeah.
Especially in the UK where you wear uniforms, so there's a bigger thing about making sure your child is definitely in the right clothes on the non-uniform days.
Yeah. It's like I have memories, you know, from when my children were in the kindergarten. I was so happy to have the 24-hour stores where I realized at 1 o'clock in the night that, you know, there was a yellow day in the kindergarten the day after, and I needed to go and buy a yellow t-shirt or something because I couldn't find anything yellow in the house.
I mean, it makes me laugh, yes, but also a bit sad that clearly, even in the country that is held up as the most wonderful, etc., country in terms of equality, there's still these issues. So give me some hope. So with this shift in terms of masculinity and what a man should be doing, what have you seen work in the areas where there is greater equality culturally?
So it's a hard question. So I would like to get back to the discussion about like masculinity and the third watch, because it interlines a lot. Because when we see these typical stereotypes, it has been a public discussion about it a lot because of this book that came out now before Christmas. I think that I can't really say that in some sectors we have been doing really well in terms of stereotypes. Maybe I would like to address the police, though, because we have the National Commissioner of the Police is a woman. And now we have a lot of women representatives in police force. Also because I've been working a lot with the police for years now, both the national and the metropolitan police. And so they have been working a lot on fighting these typical stereotypes. And the, like, for example, the stereotypes in policing are not only like men-women stereotypes. They are also, there's a lot, like there's only like a one category of man that is like in the typical stereotype of a policeman. So there's a lot of men and, of course, non-binary people also who cannot fit in this stereotype either. So I think that's really, how do you, I think with the stereotypes, it's always the same answers. It's like, you know, you need to show data about how they are affecting the workplace. And usually when you have a really strong stereotype, there is like the majority of the people in the workplace is suffering because they are not that stereotype. There is always really a few of them who are there. But in terms of stereotypes in the parenting, I think that's something that we have still a long way to go in Iceland. But with this discussion on the third watch, I feel like it's changing a bit. Like, for example, because I would like to refer to this book and the work they have been doing, this couple, Thorsteinn and Hulda. So they are also doing courses where couples can come to courses to reflect on their home and who is handling the third watch and how they can improve and how they can align better the burden between them, this being the manager of the house. And I think that's something that is so important to discuss and realize. And there was a research, I don't really have it in front of me, but there was a recent research that was done in Iceland on the third watch. I don't really have the numbers, but it showed that women are bearing the burden of this third watch way more than men.
Absolutely. Yes, I've just interviewed also for the podcast. I think by the time this podcast goes out, we might have released another podcast on mental load. And it's exactly the same thing in the US, the UK. There's a real shift positively in that more men are taking care of children practically. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But the mental load is staying with women in hetero relationships, I should say. Mm-hmm. And we need to address that. And by the time this podcast goes out, we'll also have a page with resources around the mental load. So it'll be leadersplus.org/mental load, where there are checklists for stuff to talk about to your partner, should you wish to do so. You might not have a partner, in which case.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different situation. But if you do, then I think it's worth just doing something like that. And with the fellowship program also, it's a program for individuals, but we do make a point that those who have couples, we have workshops specifically for them, mm-hmm. together, because it's such a big thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We don't talk about it, but it's absolutely massive.
Yeah, and it's also really hard to start the conversation. So that I think that's everything that can really help with it. And I think it's so important that people are aware of this term, the third watch, and they're aware of what it means. When you have defined something, it's so much easier to talk about it.
Yeah, I love that third watch or third shift concept. And it's interesting that you're linking it to data. So we're coming towards the end of our podcast, but I just want to make sure that listeners who are interested do know how to get in touch with you. And if they want to do that data-led approach, what would that look like?
Yeah, so we are alda.co. So that's our website. So it's really, you know, please just go there and, you know, look us up. So, well, I have to say, I'm so proud of everything there, but the inclusion index is probably something that I think is really of an interest. So we have the inclusion survey and inclusion index, where we are measuring the inclusivity of the workplace. And we are benchmarking it, of course, to other sector and also the sector that you are working in. And then we also have the inclusion dial, where we show you how mature the organization is in terms of inclusion. And so, and then we also have micro learning content, and we are really focusing on doing gamified content, really short but concise, addressing the biggest DEI issues, and also it's tailorized. So we see where you are in the inclusion index, and then we are providing tailorized material for each organization based on their pain points. And we are also, we have put a lot of effort into having this really fun and engaging, like concise, something that you would get yourself in the social media, not something that is forced upon you. But of course, sometimes we are talking about really serious matters as sexual harassment and bullying and so on. And then, of course, we're not using any humor, but we are using engagement. We are really focusing on learn and engage at the same time. And of course, we have a lot of like metrics also, all the key DEI metrics. So we are measuring diversity. We are also measuring inclusion and providing the equity tools needed to progress in the short. Yeah.
Sounds fun. And I can see the listeners won't be able to see the smile on your face when you're talking about it. It's clearly something you're incredibly passionate about. So we always leave our listeners with practical things they can implement. And I'm interested. So you've had a very senior role in the more traditional world, I guess. You're now running your own startup. And I just wondered, in the context of what we've talked about, which is there's a lot of disadvantage, it's not easy, it can be tough. If someone is listening and does want to progress to a CEO role, does have children, what would be one or two practical things that you would recommend they do to increase their chances of doing it and doing it happily as well?
So I would always think about, like, is this definitely the right workplace where you want to progress in? Is there a room for having making it inclusive if it is not? Because I think if this person is from more like an underrepresented group, it's really important to know that this place can become inclusive. I would always think about that. Because, of course, when you are becoming a CEO, you really want to have that power and influence that you can have there. So you have to be sure that there is not really any shadow or hidden structure that will be in your way there. So I would say that's something that I would make sure of. And then I would always say, just do it. You know, it's like you just figure it out. But of course, it's easy for me to say because I'm coming from a really, you know, even though I was saying, you know, I'm from Iceland, so it's really good infrastructure for me to progress and to enjoy my career, and because I have access to all this infrastructure. But, you know, I think it's really important that, you know, you are progressing in the right workplace and the workplace you really want to thrive in.
Exactly. And also that if it is tough, it's not your fault. You're doing brilliantly for trying to progress, for trying to make sure we have greater diversity in senior leadership level, for being a role model to others in your family, especially if you have girls. Mm-hmm. And if it's tough, it's not you, it's the system. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, Zoe. It was wonderful to chat to you, and let's keep the conversation going.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening today. And a special thank you to all of those of you who have connected with me on LinkedIn in the last few weeks. I really, really love hearing from listeners and hearing how you enjoyed the show. So it means a lot. Thank you so much. If you'd like to be in touch in real life, do consider joining the Leaders Plus Fellowship program. It is such a fantastic community of working parents supporting each other to find a way to get careers where you can make a big difference in senior roles, but also do that unapologetically in a way that works for us. And if you want to apply, then the deadline is 20th of March. You can download the brochure for the program on leadersplus.org. Podcasting is also quite a male-dominated environment. If you look at the top charting podcasts, especially outside of the kids and family space, very often it's all led by men. I can't remember the numbers, but it is very male-dominated. Just take a look at the charts. And interestingly enough, more females than males listen to podcasts. So another unequal space. And thank you for supporting this podcast by listening to it. But if you want to help us, I guess, have more influence in the space, then please do help by sharing it with your friends and by leaving a 5-star review. Thank you so much to all of those of you who've done that already. Have a wonderful week.